I am mining investor and COVID active editor of Resource Stock Digest and Auto Del Real, here with my partner, Mr. Nick Hodge, who's also an investor and the publisher of Daily Profit Cycle, amongst many hats that the gentleman wears. This is the 339th episode, if you can believe that, of our weekly therapy session we call Investing in Bizarro World. We're going to talk markets, what we're investing in, how to approach a market that has run. We're going to talk gold, silver, consolidation, oil's breaking out, up some 5% here on some China news. As always, there's lots to get to. They're bulldozing parts of the White House. But hey, how are you doing, Nick?
I'm doing great, Gerardo. I have plenty of hats. My wife says I have too many. We had a crash in the gold price. Maybe we can talk about that. Bloomberg said it fell back to earth. But anyway, if earth is $4,000 or $4,100 an ounce, I'm content to live on that planet. Sorry you have COVID, although your voice does sound better than it was when I talked to you a couple of days ago. And yeah. Pleasure to be here. Happy to go.
No.
And
yeah,
in the words of Mr. Dines in episode 339, believe the unbelievable or not.
Believe the unbelievable or not. It's there's a lot going on out there. Where do we start, man? Let's start with the commodity space. Let's start with gold. We had a one-day consolidation, a two-day consolidation in the price of gold and silver.
It was a crash, Gerardo.
It was a crash. I know. Everybody was freaking out. All the Bitcoin bros, which I still don't understand the fight between Bitcoin and gold, but all the Bitcoin bros were gleefully, you know, keyboard warrioring it away, saying, you know, we told you the rotation was coming and it's Bitcoin to the moon now. And it might still be Bitcoin to the moon, by the way, guys and gals. Like me personally, there's more than one way to make money. And I don't knock anybody as long as it's consensual and you know, you're not hurting anybody doing it, right? So now I'm rooting for the Bitcoin bros and gals to the moon with you. But any of you that thought that gold and silver's run was over have a whole other thing coming. We said as much last week. I mean, we actually said it was due for a consolidation. It was kind of a serendipitous that the crash happened the day after and the day after that, which was the Friday and the Monday, right? And so, you know, on Wednesday morning, I penned an editorial that basically said, look, I think 40-40 is the new support on gold for the time being. And I think silver at the 48 level, high 47s, if that holds, consolidation's over. That's exactly what happened. You know, gold today hit as high as 41.40. It's at 41.25 right now. Silver firmly over the 48 level. It bounced beautifully on both technical indicators. I mean, silver's at 48.75, closer to 49 now. So all this, similar to last week, similar to why last week I wasn't, you know, touting that the gold and the silver run was over. Look, the dollar index has been remarkably stable. It's sitting there at 98, 94, flirting with 99, but not getting too far ahead of itself. Not weakening too much either. And the VIX, which was a bit elevated last week, kind of flatlined for the most part this week. So all of that points to stability in the market, whether or not you like what's going on in the market, folks.
Correct.
We've been preaching that you want to be an asset owner in this market. And that as long as all of these technical indicators that Nick and I watch continue to show runway, meaning more room to grow and more room to go higher, we're going higher, folks. That's all. That's my simplified take on that. So thoughts, Nick? I know that you keep a much more technical eye on this stuff than I do.
Yeah, and I'm back in the saddle. I felt a little disheveled last week, having been out for a week and having done a ton of driving the day before. So I'll try to up my performance this week, as it were. Trees don't grow to the sky. You've heard me say that a million times. I have to pound my chest because that's what we do. But I also have to tell you that, you know, Gerardo and I run other services that we provide more in-depth coverage and analysis of the things we talk about on this podcast. Yes, we cover it every Thursday for 339 weeks in a row. And yes, we now have a premium section where we give you the fish with the appropriate accoutrement, as it were. But we do the teaching how to fish in those other letters, Junior Resource Monthly, Foundational Profits, etc. And so In the October issue of Foundational Profits, I sold some gold and gold stocks. I don't know if anybody's out there reading in the forest or not, but GLD and GDXJ had grown to some 40% of our portfolio. And I said, hey, it just as a matter of prudence, we got to trim these down closer to like 12% of our portfolio, right? So that's not a sell gold call. That's not a gold's turning bearish call. That's just a look, these gains are outsized. We're now extremely overweight. Proper and prudent portfolio management says that we got to take some off the table. And lo and behold, I was actually doing that at a gas station in Havre, Montana that Friday. 2 weeks ago, I was making those trades while we filled up the tank. But turned out to be the right call, right? Sometimes you do things for the right reason and it ends up being the right thing. I didn't know we were going to get the gold crash or the gold correction that we saw over the past week, but it was definitely felt good to take those profits and bank them in the portfolio. And then we just redeployed them, which is to say that I am continually bullish on the metals complex. We just redeployed them into an ETF that's more broad-based and not as precious metals focused. It owns a little bit of steel, it owns a little bit of coal, and a little bit of base metals produced. In that, you can sort of suss out that I see a broadening of this rally, right? Like into copper and into the base metals. And we haven't talked a lot about PGMs, but, you know, platinum and palladium are looking great. So there's that. We took a little bit off the table in the macro letter on the ETFs. If you don't mind, I'll share for a second because I feel like I haven't shared my screen in a while. Here's your levels for gold. So in the near term, like in the front week here, in the next week, essentially 4,000 is support, 4,001. And you'll see how it bounced off that level sort of twice already there in that chart. And then longer term support, like over a quarter, 3 months, something like that, is above 3,600. And we haven't even threatened to break down to that yet. But even if it did, it would be bullish. So those are the levels I was writing about in Hodge Family Office this week. And then you can see your trend line on silver, which I drew before the episode. I mean, silver's got support essentially at high 47s, as you just said, 48, 4790, something like that. But the trend line's all the way down somewhere closer to, you know, wherever this is right here, $44, $43, right? So a lot of room left that gold and silver could crash. That is correct, and still be in a long-term bull market. So, I mean, that's what I got to say about silver and gold. I don't know if you want to go into other metals or not, but the last thing I would say is that no fundamentals have changed. As I just showed you, the technicals really haven't even changed. All you got was a proper correction in gold from 43 and change, 4360 an ounce down to 4,000. And if you do the math on your calculator, it's 8.5, 8.6%, well inside the range of a healthy correction. But nothing else has changed. As you just said, the DXY is still below 100. You didn't mention rates, which are extremely soft, in which gold, I told you last week, has been trading more inversely with. And then all the other bullish catalysts are still there. Like, we've got a 97% chance of another rate cut this month, right? The debt just hit $38 trillion. I don't hear anything about central banks slowing down their gold purchases. And so all that to say, we're still in a precious metals and base metals bull market.
Yeah, somebody tweeted at me on the Resource Stock Digest page that they said, what a brutal consolidation in the precious metal space. We just wiped out a month's worth of gains. And I put up a 1 month chart and I said, a month ago, silver was at 43 and gold was at 3,700. After this brutal consolidation, we're at 48 and gold is at 4,100. I said, we're still up some 10% after the drawdown. I mean, that is just a healthy, healthy, healthy consolidation that, again, if that's the new base, if my new base is 4,048, oh my God, it's going to be a beautiful end to the year and a beautiful 2026. Even if we broke down to the second support level of 43 and 3,600, if that's the new, you know, spring that's coiled, that bounces back up in phenomenal shape either way. And look, you touched on the rates, the national debt, right? The government's still shut down, right? Yes.
Second longest shutdown ever. Yep.
All right. We got to be number one. We're number one at everything. We're not really number one, but we're number America. One at everything. I go, it's America. It's America. Look, the national debt is $38 trillion. It was 36 in January, y'all.
Where's Doge? What happened to Doge?
What happened to Doge? What happened to a lot of things, right? The government's still shut down because we don't want to swear in the lady that's going to be the tiebreaker to release the Epstein files, because God knows we got to protect the pedophiles, right? I'll get me going on that. I ranted last week. I'll leave it alone this week. But my point is, fundamentally, nothing has changed. Technically, nothing has changed. If you need the narrative, and a lot of the narrative is accurate, that central banks are buying, that they're people around the world, governments around the world are debasing their currency, that's going to continue. All of that is true. And so, you know, the narrative and the technicals are married and holding hands happily in this case and marching forward. So I see higher prices. Now, the stock market is not the economy, is not the precious metals physical spot price, right? And I think it's a good opportunity, Nick, to talk about valuations. You mentioned taking profits in one of your services. I mentioned last week that I did the exact same thing. I took 1,000% profits at a uranium company that was a $500 million company when I recommended it, and became a $7 billion company over a couple of years. It'd be irresponsible of me to not take 1,000% profits, especially when we're vetting companies that have management teams that have developed and grown companies into that billion-dollar status, that have market caps of $20 million. It would be irresponsible of me and to my readers to not take 1,000% profits and redeploy the capital to what I do best specifically. What I do best is try to find earlier stage stories that we vet, that we do due diligence on, that have smaller market caps, that give me a clear path towards growth. Does it always work? No. But if I have a clear path towards growth and a team that knows how to execute, the chances of my $20 million company becoming a $100 million company in this market are pretty damn good. And that probably happens pretty quickly. So you take 1,000% profits here, you rotate them into a $20 million company. If in 6 to 12 months time, that's now a $100 million company, you just turn your 1,000% profits into 4,000 or 5,000% profits. Wash, rinse, repeat cycle. And you know, that's how you build and accumulate rich wealth and fortunes and richness in this space. And so that's what both Nick and I are doing right now. We're taking profits on companies that I'm sure will double in this market, and redeploying that capital into earlier stage. We have a deal, a private deal, that I think we're finally going to be able to check the final box on the due diligence scale. But it's a deal with a gentleman that we've made tons of money with before, a gold deal in a tier one jurisdiction with a network to bring in more assets with a tiny market cap that I am absolutely confident will be oversubscribed. Subscribers of Private Placement Intel will have access to that deal. And look, we like the company and the asset enough that it'll likely find its way into one of our letters for the simple fact that we think it provides great value. That's what I am focused on doing right now. I am looking for value. I am not chasing the meme stocks. I'm not chasing Beyond Meat. I'm not chasing, you know, the stuff that my hairstylist tells me or asks me about, right? That's not what I do. That's not what we do. That's not how we've made our living thus far. And we're going to continue to do that. I have one in the queue for Junior Resource Monthly in the next month or two. I have one in the queue for Junior Resource Speculator that I'll likely present to you in the next week or two. And then Nick and I have one or two that are in the queue for Private Placement Intel. So again, we said it last week. I said it during the latest speculator session. Value, value, value. If I was constructing a portfolio right now of publicly listed companies in my portfolio, I'll tell you which three of those companies they would be, or four would be in the premium portion of the podcast. But there is still a lot of value in a market that has a lot of froth in it.
Yeah. I was telling you, like, I've been doing interviews recently, and one of the easy questions to ask is, you know, these companies have run so much. You just mentioned a uranium company that was up 1,000%, but other companies have run. We've talked about companies that have doubled and tripled off drill holes and things like that. Yeah. And we've talked about other companies that are up 200-300% on the year as silver, gold, PGMs, and copper have done what they've done. And so the question is, the question stems from a limited, I don't want to say mindset. It stems from a scarcity mindset, right? Like, what are you going to buy if you're looking at this nexus of precious metals stocks on the TSX or the TSXV? Sure. there's levels to everything in life. You know, you and I were talking to somebody this week who counts in the tens, if not hundreds of millions. And he said that he was at an event where he felt poor, right? There's levels in the mining space as well. So there's groups, investors, strategic financiers that, count in decades or cycles, not in years or quarters, right? And have been waiting since the last cycle with quality assets to parade out to fanfare when the cycle returned. And I think that's what you're talking about in some respects. So you were involved with a couple of companies that are private that have been, you know, waiting to either spin out assets or to IPO when the environment was ripe or right. And that's one of the places you can rotate that money into if you have those connections, if you follow someone that has those connections, and if you have the capital and the net worth to do that. And what I mean is these assets haven't had a chance to be bid up by the market over the past year as the commodity prices increase. They've raised money privately at valuations that they've assigned. And so when they walk them out, either by putting assets into a capital pool corp, a CPC, or spinning assets out into already public companies, vending them in to already public companies, or doing direct listings or RTOs to get themselves public, you have a kick at those cans if you can write checks into private placements and participate in deals that have not been bid up yet. And fortunately enough, and also because we've done a lot of work over the past 15, 20 years, we have some of those connections and we're able to participate in some of those deals and extend the participation in those deals to those in our network, i.e. private placement intel, right? So, and even, you know, like you said, junior resource speculator, some of these are already public, as I just said, and they're vending assets in. So a lot of different ways to find value, a lot of different ways to skin a cat. You don't just have to choose from the fish that are already in the barrel, as it were.
Yeah, no. And again, we're going to continue to do that. That's not anything that's going to slow down. Some of these assets are great assets, man. I'm excited to be able to recommend them and present them in private placements at $7 million, $10 million, $20 million valuations. In the premium portion of the podcast, I want to talk a bit about your most recent uranium recommendation, which I believe has like a $19, $20 million valuation right now. And I think it's going to be one of the premier explorers in America for uranium in a uranium cycle that I think will be one for the books. Like, to me, that's one of the no-brainers of this cycle right now, where I would redeploy 1,000% profits and come over here and park it in that $20 million company. We'll see if they can do it again, right? And so a lot of opportunity out there. Try not to chase folks. Know what you own. That's still important. And look, you have an administration that, for better or worse, is now positioning itself
with a
portfolio of, you know, portfolio of natural resource stocks, and now potentially a portfolio of quantum stocks. They denied it. The company that was involved in that conversation came back and said, "We call bullshit. We're in active conversations. We just got off the phone with the administration." So we'll see how that plays out. However I feel about it doesn't really matter. The only thing that really matters is how I can use the trend to make myself and subscribers and family and friends a little better off financially than they were before that started happening. I am not in the position, unfortunately, to dictate whether or not American institutions should be taking equity stakes in public companies, however I feel about that, however that looks to me. I am in a position to know what a lot of those companies own. And, you know, in one company's case, I owned it in the portfolio a month ago or so, and I took some profits on it because I didn't feel that the valuation was justified anymore. I thought it had gotten ahead of itself. I thought it was great when I recommended it, and I didn't think it was so great now, regardless of whether Trump and the administration came in and wanted a 10% stake. That actually helped me have a liquidity event, which I was able to execute on. And so, again, if you're not watching this on a day-to-day basis all day, almost half the night, then I can understand why some of this stuff might just not make as much sense or seem disconnected. But once you're actually just doing that and connecting all the dots, it gets a little easier to identify the wheat from the chaff, as you may, right?
Yeah. We should talk more about the administration. I saw the quantum computing headlines. I'm not sure if it's true or not either, but it's like Oprah giving away cars at this point, right? Like, we'll take a stake in quantum. We'll take a stake in copper. We'll take a stake in gold. I mean, that's what it sounds like. And
that's what it is.
Yeah, in a very real way, that's affecting our portfolio. You just said you had a company that was tangled up in some of that. I've had two just in the Hodge family office portfolio, and it's not a large portfolio, right? That's another thing. People own too many stocks in this sector. I think there's like 16 stocks in the Hodge family office portfolio, and two of them have already been selected for Fast 41 permitting. It's almost like we do good due diligence and we know what projects merit advanced permitting. Actually, you've had more than one because you got Perpetua as well, right? And maybe even more than that. So
yeah, there's been a few.
Yeah, I want to spend some time on that for a second. I tweeted out, and we also have a reader question, so I wanted it all ties together. I tweeted out the other day the link to the Fast 41 permitting site. It's a public website. You can go on there. You can sort by sector. You can drop down to mining and hit go, and then you can see there's less than 60 projects that have been selected so far, and we just mentioned four or five of them, right? So, I mean, we're doing pretty good at picking the stocks that are getting this government support because of the merit of the geology they have, because of the prospectiveness, because of the importance to the mining and resource supply chains that we've been discussing for, I'm going to cuss, a fucking decade now. And here we are, it's now coming to fruition. So go on that website, check it out, sort by mining, and you can see, again, all the projects that have been designated for Fast 41 permitting. One of them, as a reader wrote in, and I'm not that familiar with this project, though I did see it the day that it happened, and I tweeted out that day, look, even Montana's getting some love, because if you've been following, you know, mining for any extended period of time, you know that it's become a little bit increasingly difficult to get permitted in Montana than it has been in other states. Yeah. And the question is this, what do you think of Hecla's recent approval from Montana to reopen the Montanore mine in the Cabinet Mountains near Libby, Montana? Would it make Hecla an opportunity? And then he shares an article that he saw this in the Daily Montanan online, October 13th. He says that this mine previously had asbestos problems, and he's surprised that this venture was approved. Yeah, the day I saw it, it was actually commensurate with the trilogy stuff, right, in Alaska. And I tweeted out, hey, man, even Montana's getting some love in this Fast 41 permitting. And then this question came in. So I took a look at a Hecla chart. I took a stroll around the website. The answer is, I don't know. I mean, I think Hecla has been an opportunity, right? So, you know, if you look at the chart of Hecla next to the GDX or the GDXJ, it's been outperforming for a month to 3 months. I don't know if I'd say point at this, you know, Libby project getting Fast 41 permitting designation and say, hey, that's my buy catalyst, just because Hecla is a larger company. They have many producing assets in many jurisdictions, and I'm not sure how much this one approval would move the needle for them. But I would also say that if I was already a Hecla shareholder, I would definitely take delight in this news and view it as a potential catalyst to have more production in the future in an area that, as the reader notes, was questionable because of previous asbestos problems or whatever. I would also say that go to that website that I mentioned earlier. We can put a link up in the description of this podcast and look for companies who are more concentrated on a single asset or two that are getting this Fast 41 permitting. That's going to move the needle for those companies more than it is for a producer that has many producing assets. And I think that's a pretty good answer. That's about as deeply as I thought about it. But then I would just fall back to the, you know, rising tide lifts all boats, all the turkeys fly when the wind is right. And certainly the administration is gusty when it comes to these Fast 41, you know, permitting things, and they are aiding the direction that the complex is already headed. So love to see these announcements, love to see that the mining is finally being embraced. But still have a long way to go. And this sort of relates to the first part of the discussion we had with the pullback in precious and base metals. Is like, we're not anywhere close to incenting the sort of supply we need to come online to make a dent in the Chinese production and refinement and secure the things that we need for our own military and industrial needs, right? So by that measure, I think there's still a long way to go in terms of government support, et cetera.
Yeah, and a note there, right? We're not only not anywhere close to securing enough supply to meet the demand that's coming on or the demand that exists now. Separately, independently from that, we're also wanting to stockpile a national reserve, right? Like a government bank, a resource bank, in essence. And that part of the story hasn't even commenced yet because we haven't done step one, which is secure enough supply to just meet the current demand for what we want to do. That's going to be step one. Step two is going to be the demand shock of, oh, and by the way, if policy holds true with the next administration and the one after that, you know, now we're going to stockpile this much to make sure we never fall decades behind China and other countries. And so the demand that's, again, and I said this last week, but the demand that's not being factored into analyst models, I think is going to stun a lot of people. And it's going to really provide some real good tailwinds for those of us that are doing the due diligence, that know the teams, that know the geologists, that have assets that are still private, that are coming, you know, to the market here soon, and will continue to as this cycle develops. So no, buckle up, folks. It's going to be a fun couple of years. We are nowhere near the top in precious metals. Copper, which we haven't touched on, copper had a phenomenal week this week after, you know, a slight pullback on the spot price down to the 470 level, hit 491, 492 earlier today, above five in the futures. And so copper's looking healthy to me as well. You already talked PGMs. I want to note oil. Oil had a move here in the second half of the day today, up over 5%. And it's up on a report that Chinese state oil majors are suspending Russian oil purchases over fears that there will be new U.S. sanctions. And look, am I an expert on China or oil or Russia? Absolutely not. But I do know that these sanctions and these tariffs are causing havoc all around the world, right? Whether it's here in the U.S. for our cattle ranchers, which Trump was talking down to. I don't know how that's going to play out here over the next election cycle or two for the fine folks on the right. But he basically said, if it weren't for me, I don't have it here verbatim, but if it weren't for me, you would be doing what you've done for the last 20 years, which is horrible. My tariffs are the only reason that you exist. And something, 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 right? And I just couldn't believe that that's how he was talking to his base, right? And then I sat there and I went, oh, Gerardo, come on. You couldn't believe that from this guy? And I found myself feeling silly that I was surprised by the tone, because I know, like I've told you a million times, neither side really cares about us, guys. Like, they only care about themselves. It's why you don't have the Epstein files. It's why only the richest of the rich get the tax breaks. It's why Trump just pardoned a gentleman that was in Santos? Prison. That Santos was so 3 days ago. Yeah, Santos was ripping off veterans, taking the money he raised for combat war veterans, and going and buying dresses and glasses for himself, did 3 months of a 6-year sentence and was pardoned by Trump, right? Well, that was 3 days ago. One of the founders of Binance just got pardoned. And this is a guy that went to prison for helping provide the platform where terrorists and drug cartels were laundering money. He went to prison for laundering money, helping launder money for some of these groups. And so pardon just Trump him. So for all you law and order people that are cool with ICE snatching up the tamale lady, because the only thing she did wrong was she doesn't have her papers in order. She's not breaking any law. She's paying taxes. She's selling a product that's legal. She's not, you know, violating anybody's rights. For all of you that agree with that and don't agree with this, we just don't see eye to eye, folks. You guys are living in a separate reality. And maybe it's the algorithm, like we said last week. But at some point, you got to start using a little common sense and just seeing that it's rigged.
Yeah, I mean, no doubt he would talk to his base like that. And I was touching on some of this last week with my trip to Montana. I don't want to get back into that.
Yeah.
As you say, like, they don't care about you, right? So they'll do whatever they need to. Like, they're buying Argentinian beef now and not American beef while those guys are struggling. And they tell them to go pound sand. You had on this sheet here, The private credit defaults coming in. And I know you mentioned the community banks last week, and I was saying, I still own capital markets. I was telling you about an ETF that doesn't own banks, but it owns, exchanges and indices and indice providers and things like that. And I wanted to touch on that for a second, because I think both our brains work in a weird way. And then you said they don't care about you. That's one of the reasons I own that ETF and not the KRE, which is the and the regional bank thing, and not the, what is it? Oh God, XLF, the SPDR financial thing. Cause those are banks and smaller banks, and they will let those fail. I was reading something earlier this week about the Obama era and the bailout of the banks and the troubled asset relief program and all of that. And it made a point that I hadn't really thought about before. And it was saying they didn't really bail out the banks, right? They certainly didn't bail out the common man and woman. What they did is they bail out the creditors, right? And earlier I said there's levels to everything in life, right? It's like Game of Thrones, the Iron Bank, right? So, they won't let those big international entities fail, the credit providers, the exchange providers, the credit rating agencies. That's why I own that ETF and not the smaller banks, precisely because they don't care about you. And there is a class that they care about. And going back to Trump and the farmers, and going back to Trump and whether it's, you know, socialism to invest in these companies. I said it a couple of weeks ago on this podcast, like I missed out on a lot of money in my 20s, pointing fingers and saying this isn't right and it doesn't need to be done that way. And do you think Nick Hodge in Baltimore and the Outsider Club changed a fucking thing about the system? No, they did not. Did Nick Hodge start making more money when he said, fuck it, I'll play the game they give me and I'll understand how that works? Yes, Nick Hodge made a lot more money when he did that. And that's just what I'm talking about here. Just parsing that out, putting your capital in the places that are going to be protected or insulated, and playing the game in spite of what they do and how they don't care about you, right? So own the Iron Bank and not the Podunk Regional Community Bank, because they don't give a fuck about Podunk. You know what I mean?
Yeah. No. Well said. Anything else on the markets that you want to chat? Because there's a couple of like they did this past week has brought like some great movie making material that I'm excited about. I know it's not going to happen right away, but the next couple of years, we should get some blockbuster films with some phenomenal actors that should entertain me.
Get into it.
The Louvre, the famous Louvre was robbed for $103 million. It's 2025. I can't believe that these guys were able to pull up with a vehicle-mounted mechanical lift. They gained access to the Gallery of Apollo via a balcony close to the river. The ladder goes up to the first floor windows. Two of the thieves get in by cutting through the window with power tools. They threaten the guards. The guards take off running because they ain't dying for, you know, the crown jewels. They cut through the glass of two display cases. They jump back on the lift. They come back down. And they get away on scooters. All of this happened within 4 minutes.
Wow.
And they have the footage of this.
Was George Clooney there?
He might be there for the movie. I mean, I could not believe that this happened here in 2025. For those of you not familiar, this is where they keep the Mona Lisa, folks. This isn't like just some fancy museum. This is the museum of museum. It's the pinnacle. The Michael Jordan of museums, right? And so
it is France, though.
Oh, man. Look, so the theory, according to authorities, is that the robbers were under orders from a criminal organization. Well, no shit, Captain Obvious. Yeah. Like, you think somebody just decides that they're going to go rob the Louvre because it's the easiest thing on the planet? Of course not. Which brings me to my second great movie in the making that's unfolding right now. The FBI, who won't release the Epstein files, and Kash Patel, who was the biggest proponent, got elected, you know, and had a lot of support on the release of the Epstein files, but all of a sudden can't recall and doesn't know, and just there's just nothing there to support the theory. They arrested about 30 people today in an international gambling ring, and amongst them, a current NBA coach, a current NBA player, And former NBA players, and you know, some crime figures, crime organizations, mafia related folks. And so when I'm reading the details of this, I'm going, the basketball player Terry Rozier, who was arrested, this is a guy that's made over $100 million in his life. Chauncey Billups is an active coach for the Portland Trailblazers and known around the league to be like one of the most like well-rounded, well-spoken community leaders within the Portland area. And so, look, innocent until proven guilty, right, is the way that it should be. And so let's let them defend themselves and go to court and have their say and have their day. But it looks away, right? It most absolutely looks away. And some of the details they had, they said they had tables that could scan the cards. So when you put your hand down so nobody sees it, the table actually underneath has got a scanner and it's scanning it and it's sending it somewhere. They had a way to relay it back and just all sorts of stuff that I'm not a gambler, so I just would have never thought of, but sounded like it was pretty sophisticated.
Well, enlighten me, because I saw the arrests and I've been busy and I know you have too, but it sounds like you know more about this than I do. They weren't gambling on basketball. It was gambling,
like poker games.
Oh, I thought they were like fixing games or something.
Well, some of the games are poker games, and some of the allegations are of players throwing games to come in under the spread. And that's where they say that the mafia had certain players and certain coaches, you know, on the payroll. In essence, you know, bribing them or extorting them to tank on plays and tank on points, you know, so they could come in or over. And the funny, not funny thing about this was I was watching this on ESPN and there was a DraftKings ad at the bottom of it while the report was being told.
I was going to get there immediately. Yep.
And the irony of the reporters sitting here talking about how this cannot happen in America,
right,
and professional sports, while there's a big ass DraftKings logo at the bottom of the page, the screen. It was just like so 2025 for me. It was like, that is exactly where we are as far as society goes in hypocrisy, right? Like we've talked about this on this podcast before, how I think America and society is grooming the next set of degenerate gamblers. And I think it's going to become an epidemic in this country more and more. And we're seeing the numbers bear it out, right? The hypocrisy there, done. Man. Yeah, get it.
We've talked about this on the podcast a fair amount. I've talked about the DraftKings and the other ways to bet on sports. This has been coming for a while. I remember seeing some sports betting deals back in the 2015, 2016 era, where the technology became available to track these players individually. And so you could start doing bets on individual plays in the game, the performance of individual players. And gosh, I'm going to garble this because there's so much, but I really don't like the sports betting, man. Like, and you've heard me say this, you say this, Jeff says this, you know, we gamble on a daily basis. It's educated speculation is what we do, but it makes no room in my life for gambling. But other folks, many other folks, millions of other folks, certainly a lot of guys my age are committed, dedicated, if not addicted to the sports betting. I mean, I see it, how they do these parlays and they tweet about it and talk about it. And I largely have no idea what they're talking about because I don't do it. So a couple of other things. It's a function of this YOLO lifestyle that we've been forced into with the inflation and the lack of upward mobility and the K-shaped recovery and the wealth inequality and the feeling of these millennials and young Gen Xers and whatever we're calling the new fucking generation, Gen Y or whatever.
Laboo-boos.
That they feel.
I call them the Laboo-boo generation.
That's funny. They see that they can't get ahead, right? The traditional way, by saving, investing, buying a house because they can't afford a house. So they roll the dice on these instant payoffs that have, you know, a make or break sort of results, right? It's no different than the advent of meme stock trading and 0 days till expiration options and bet it all on black. I mean, there's no real difference there, right? The other thing is, some of this has been known, and we've seen more than inklings of this from the NBA and other sports. It was just a couple of weeks ago we were talking about Who the fuck was it? Steve Ballmer having a zombie corporation that they were using to pay a player
Kawhi
to
Leonard,
to cheat the salary cap. And in that discussion, I'm pretty sure we brought up Mr. October this year, Shohei Ohtani, right? Who was clearly fucking gambling on the sports.
Like I said, like, that interpreter is well off and retired and set for life, folks. Don't worry about him. He is good.
So, I mean, this is happening, and I've read other articles about the NBA and how the players, you know, have signals or pull each other on the shorts when foul shots are going on to say, like, we're going to take it easy, we're not going to play hard, and they don't turn it on until the playoffs. Like, some of this stuff was well known. And then now I'm going to get off on a little bit of a tangent. And then the sports fans are, to me, they're like political zealots, right? Because it's like the same way that people can keep supporting Trump no matter what he does, or keep supporting Biden or Kamala no matter what they do. I see it in the sports complex as well. Like, no disrespect, but a little disrespect to Penn State fans. Like, y'all guys was abusing players in the locker room for a long ass time and covering it up. And I just see this fervent Penn State support, and it's like, nah, man, I'd have to like walk away from that. Like, the same way I walked away from the NFL and haven't watched that too much since the whole kneeling debacle, et cetera, et cetera. And so anyway, now I'm just off on a tangent, but clear to see the advent of gambling, how it was going to impact sports, how it causes addiction, and how people get wrapped up in it. And then bringing it back to your point, yeah, man, I happened to have on, like, I don't know what it was, the Fox pregame show for the NFL this weekend, and the commentators are now talking about it. Like, yeah, the, you know, how the head guy is always on the left, and he's got his dumb people who provide the laugh lines on the right, and he's got to bring it back to seriousness. Like, that guy now gets paid to say, and you can bet on today's game, I'm DraftKings, da-da-da-da-da. It's like, come the fuck on, man.
Look, and if there's one takeaway, again, from to tie all those things together, the hypocrisy, right? The hypocrisy of monetizing something and putting a legal banner over it. The hypocrisy of Donald Trump telling the cattle farmers that for the last 20 years, they haven't done shit, essentially. And that, you know, the hypocrisy of this administration asking for a couple of $100 million for him being investigated for criminal acts. I mean, and then using that to tear down the White House. I could care less if they tear down the White House, right? Yeah. I don't have a horse in that race or a bone to pick there. I'm not a historian in that sense, and I don't have any personal connection. So I understand the people that may feel there's a tradition there, and I get all sides of it. I personally don't have a horse in that race, but the hypocrisy of telling people that, you know, every time they go and raid these cities and these centers, and I see them taking little old ladies, and yes, out of the 20 people they take, they find two with a criminal record. And I got to hear Stephen Miller's little racist ass on TV talking about how they just, you know, clean the streets of the rapists and the violent offenders and all of that. We want you to do that, Stephen Miller. Believe you me, I wish your hit rate was a little better. Prove it. Show me. Don't tell me. We want to see it. Till then, it's all a bunch of hypocrisy on the corporate level, on a societal level, on a political level, and it happens from all sides, man.
All sides. Yep.
All sides.
Yeah. Yeah. You can end it there. I see people. Yeah.
I gotta say one thing. I am thankful to that hypocrisy, right? I'm thankful to the interpreter for taking the fall for Shohei Ohtani, man. He put on the single best baseball game I have ever seen by a player. I've been watching baseball since 1984. The guy came out and pitched six innings, pitched into the seventh, struck out 10,
yep,
held them scoreless, and then went back and in four at-bats, hit three home runs and drew a walk. I mean, that is absolutely insane, right? So somewhere I hope his interpreter got another annual bonus for just giving us that game, because that wouldn't have happened if Shohei would have got caught. And if he didn't have the foresight to have a fall man, Lee Harvey Oswald, ready to take a bullet for him, right? Because that's clearly what happened in that case, in my opinion, allegedly.
Right. No, anyway, wild times out there. Lots of people have remodeled the White House. I don't know how it's being paid for, but I'm tired of the tweets that say, how can this end well? Or what could possibly go wrong? Or the ones about the White House where if metaphors don't write themselves, and then, you know, you see the people come back like, the Clintons like looted the White House when they left and remodeled some shit. Like, come on, man. Like, it just, it happens. Stop. Like, fucking stop.
I do got to ask you one thing before we get to the premium portion. I know we're running long, but it's that kind of time, right? It's 2025. Yeah.
And I got to tell you about the Chilean Chaku traps. I got to
tell you. There you go. So go ahead, tell me. Folks. You guys get comfy. Just a question. Read a report that the administration now wants to ask the Supreme Court whether or not people that regularly smoke marijuana should be allowed to own guns. Thoughts on that?
Oh, gosh, that's putting me on the spot. I mean, it's legal substance. You should be able to own a weapon, provided that you don't have other, you know, convictions, gun-related convictions, violent-related convictions. Yeah, what's the difference between cannabis and alcohol? If anything, alcohol is more likely to persuade your judgment to use a weapon or to make you violent than being couch locked with some indica on the couch with your Glock. So yeah, and that's it. I mean, yeah, if it's a legal substance, then I think you should be allowed to own a weapon. Yeah.
Well, I hope the Supreme Court rules in, if they review it, right, rules in that way. Cause I mean, that's a slippery slope. Is Adderall a drug? Is alcohol a drug? I mean, if they rule that, no, you shouldn't be able to, there you go. There go the guns for everybody. Hey, most of this country's on something.
Oh, sure. 100%.
Yeah.
I forget the numbers, but yeah, tens of millions on antidepressants for sure, which is more concerning to me than marijuana.
Yeah. All right. Yeah, just wanted to get your thoughts. You got to talk to me about these traps, man.
Yeah. So I read these articles about antiquity and ancient whatever and how we evaluate them and find new things. And it relates to geology is one of the reasons I'm interested in there, because they use some of the same techniques, geophysics and mapping and satellite data and things like that. So I was reading this article about these Chilean Chaku traps, C-H-A-C-U. These are essentially big stone walls. There's one on the left that makes like a big V that's like whatever, 100 meters long, and then one on the right that's like 90 meters long. So that's like a football field or more, right? And then they funnel down into a V, and then they dump into a trap, right? So the theory is that these ancient hunters used to run llamas or alpacas or whatever into this trap from far away, and then they would funnel them down into this V, and they would fall into the containment trap where they would then harvest them to get their meat. What's interesting to me is that until last week, there was less than a dozen of these traps known to us, to modern humans. And
right.
This guy did some analysis, satellite imagery analysis, and found like 76 new ones, which is more than a dozen by a couple of factors, yeah. Right? And not only did he find 76 new ones in Chile, he found another 100 more further to the south in the Camarones Valley. And so I don't know what that means, except that there's a lot of shit out there that we haven't found that we're now starting to find with modern technology. And I would be cautious. I mean, that's a lot, right? 12 to 76 to 100. I would imagine some of those are on prospective geologic land. And we know how that goes, even in South Dakota, United States of America. So for that reason, I was interested in this because it's a lot. I mean, you think they're going to have to protect these areas. They're going to excavate these areas. They're going to, you know, get the scientists in there, et cetera, et cetera. So it's fascinating to me. God, we're a fucking awesome species. We were making these traps, a long ass time ago to harvest these things, but I wonder where else they're going to turn up and what else we're going to find. So that's that Chilean Chaku traps. I thought that was pretty friggin' interesting, and I thought it was fascinating how many more we found just with using basically like Google satellite imagery. Very interesting.
That's incredible. I mean, it kind of like underscores the amount that is to be discovered yet, right? That hasn't yet been discovered, that people didn't think to look. And I think that's a good segue into the premium portion of the podcast. We're going to talk about discovering and looking for stuff. Thank you all for hanging out today. It was a long one. My name is Gerardo Del Real, along with Mr. Nick Hodge. I hope to be COVID-free next week. Glad you hung out with us this week. Please be safe out there. Take care. Have a great end to your month. We'll see you here before the end of October, obviously on the 30th. Take care, everyone.
See ya.